Today's show, we talk who's next for Texas A&M, Mississippi State. Jim Harbaugh has a press conference. There's a lawsuit in the Pac-2, and someone robbed the Rose Bowl.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
I know there was a time when I said a chicken is a nervous bird. I don't eat chicken. I only eat meat. But I was dead wrong. These chickens are low maintenance and high production.
Russ Dellinger.
Be different, right? You got to be kind of different to win at Mississippi State. I think Dan was different in a lot of ways, especially offensively. Jackie was different in his way off the field.
And SI's Pat Forty.
And he backed out and said he would stay at Mississippi, but if you're Mississippi, you can't be kidding yourself into thinking you're going to keep Lane Kiffin.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, and we're about 48 hours since Jimbo Fisher got fired at Texas A&M, and Aggie fans have constructed a very reasonable and perspective-driven list of ideal candidates, as you'd expect. Now, look, this is a very good job. We all agree. I think Pat and I have brought up, and all of us have brought up, like, is there something cursed about the place? Like, why can't they just ever win one double-digit win season in the last 25 years?
Is there something cursed? Dan, have you ever seen The Midnight Yell?
Okay, that could be it.
It might Maybe. Be that. It could it be might that. Be it. The curse it of The be. Midnight Yell.
Those outfits they make the male cheerleaders wear.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Okay, there's a few things. We have some suspects. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
We can construct a scenario in which it is a cursed job.
You see the SEC shorts on the A&M? It was hilarious.
Yeah. It was good. It was good. They do great stuff over there. Anyway, I posited Bill Belichick and Urban Meyer the other day, and it's not as crazy as some of these ones that have come up on some of the A&M fan boards. But you know what? Shoot high. So let's play a game of Aggie's dream scenario, yes or no. Okay, you can just basically go yes or no on that. We'll get to maybe – we already talked Urban. We don't know.
We did
but look, they just paid – they effectively paid – Jimbo Fisher, $20.7 million a year to coach the team the last 5.8 seasons.
Yeah.
$122 million. It's over $20 million a year with the buyout, not counting all the staff they're going to buy out. Like, what if you just do that up front?
Well,
you know, I mean, Nick Saban's making 11.4. What if you sit there and be like, 17.5 we're going to spend on our head coach? We just spent 20 and got 45 victories. Many of them against, you know, New Mexico and stuff like that. They haven't won a road game in 2 years.
Yeah. They've been a wildly underachieving program, period.
Yeah. It's not been good. All right. So it seems that number one on the list is Dan Campbell, tight end from 95 to 99, currently the coach of the 7-2 Detroit Lions.
God.
Biting kneecaps up in the Motor City. Yeah. Pat, yes or no? Chances are, let's do 0% to 100%. Dan Campbell, next head coach of the Aggies.
3%.
How about 3?
That? I'm giving it 3. Just like he's odd enough that maybe he would arrive at some decision that, by golly, he loves that midnight yell, and he loves the gig'em, and he loves the Corps of Cadets, and he loves the tumbleweeds that blow around that beige campus. More than being a successful NFL coach who's going to take the Lions back to the playoffs and be the hero of that franchise, like for the last since Barry Sanders left. So, yeah, sure. Sure, he's going to do that. 3% chance.
Zero. Zero for any sitting NFL coach, head coach. I mean, college coaches are leaving for the NFL because they don't want to deal with the recruiting situation. So, I don't think any sitting head coach in the NFL, and maybe not even coordinators, are going to be coming to college.
First off, A, he would be fantastic there.
Oh, my God. He'd be perfect.
I mean, Dan Campbell, college coach, would be pretty awesome. Dan Campbell, A&M, because he could kind of really, like, I know it sounds weird, but I think he could let his hair down.
Yeah.
There's still a sheen of professionalism going on where he's trying to prove that, yeah, he's totally crazy, but he has to be, you know, kind of NFL button down. Not if he's back with the Aggies.
No, he could lean into the whole hoorah business, man.
0%. A 7-2 NFL coach, you'd not leave a team when you're 7-2.
No.
He would have to quit in the middle of a team that has a realistic chance of making a conference championship game and a Super Bowl. Not sure they're I'd take the Eagles.
Sure.
But you do not leave that job in the middle, because they'd have to, you can't, what are you going to wait till like the end of January for him?
Well, Dan, I'll tell you exactly how it's going to work. See, he's going to have a right-hand man who's going to be in place for him and is going to get everything going, and they're going to work the portal, and they're going to work the NIL and the 12th Fan Foundation and everything. And then Dan will come in when he's good and ready.
Yeah, totally what would happen, because the Lions wouldn't fire him immediately.
That's right.
For trying to do two jobs at once. Like, what? No chance. Someday, I hope it happens. If Dan Campbell, I mean, it's hard to be like Belichick and stay for 20 years, but... or 25 years, but no, not happening. But hey,
3%. I'm holding on to my 3%.
You are wildly optimistic. Dan Lanning, Oregon. He's already spoken out and said not only does he not want the job, but in a credit to him, since he's not even trying to use it to get more money, since I'm already taken well care of. That's a first. Integrity. There is integrity. Call Tony Patini. There's some integrity in college sports. It belongs to Dan Lanning. I just found it.
I was impressed, actually, by that. Like, he just came really out good. And unequivocally said, I ain't leaving. I don't want it. I don't need it. I like the job I have. I mean, he did. He violated coach code there. But
yeah,
he was – at least that's one name you can absolutely draw a line through.
Yeah, I was looking at some of his quotes, because they were pretty incredible. I'm not going anywhere. There's zero chance I would be coaching somewhere else. He shot it down pretty quickly. I still think there's a chance, more of a chance than our boy Man Campbell. Give me 15%.
Whoa!
Wow!
The honesty of college coaches. The man literally said there's no way.
It's pretty low. 15% is pretty low.
1%.
We are used to them lying.
Come on, man. Like, but, y'all remember how many times, I mean, you know, the greatest one of all time did it, you know?
Yeah.
Twice.
I will not coach the Alabama Crimson Tide. I mean, he said it. Yeah.
No.
No. I'm going zero. I'm going to trust you, Dan Lanning.
I am too. I'm going bad zero. I don't like your fourth down decisions, but I like your commitment here.
Integrity. Guardrails. Yep.
There we go.
Mike Norvell, Florida State. Undefeated. He can come and do mop-up duty on Jimbo's mess a second time. From Texas. Certainly doing an excellent job. Did an excellent job previously at Memphis.
Yep.
You know, he would be my ideal candidate, but... Does he leave FSU, Pat? Percent chance?
He would be my ideal candidate as well, if Texas A&M can get over the, you know, the psychic baggage of we're going to go get a Florida State guy again. But this is very much a different scenario. Norvell's on top of his game. He's doing great work. As you mentioned, his Memphis track record was excellent. I get the feeling... This is probably a stick 'em up from Norvell to get everything he can out of Florida State, which certainly is very excited to be back at the top of the sport. And, you know, he can play this one very well. You know, the Florida State's very loud complaint for the last year, we're not getting enough revenue in the ACC. Norvell, hey, you know what? I got better setup over there at A&M. I'm going to say 30%. I don't think he ultimately goes, but I'm going to say 30%.
The problem with this one is he's going to be coaching probably through December. Yeah. Right? I mean, A&M's not going to hire a coach on January 2nd. I don't think they're going to wait that long. So that's one problem. Second problem is, man, does he want to go to somewhere and rebuild again? He just did it, and he's kind of on top there. So 10%.
Yeah, I'm going single digits on this. I think he stays. I think he just watched. I do find the humor of, like, we don't want another FSU coach. Like, it's FSU's the problem.
Right. I mean,
like, you date Miss America and it doesn't work out, you know, and then another Miss America is interested in you. You're like, oh, no, I'm sorry. We're going to Miss Canada. You know, get over it. Yeah, that's probably a theory. I think he stays. I think the timing is a big issue, and he's going to be for the next one. I mean, here's the thing with this calendar is a mess. The transfer portal is a huge problem for the coaching cycle. We talked about this last year. College football, you go to the NFL, and there's some problems here college football can't solve, but the NFL, you have the regular season, then you have like what they call Black Monday when everyone gets fired, and you have the job search, and it's a little clunky because you got the playoffs going on. And sometimes, you know, but NFL coaches don't switch jobs, but you could get coordinators. But then you have your championship, then you have your draft combine, then you have free agency in March 1st, then you have your draft. Everything's spread out. In college football, they try to do the transfer portal, the early signing window, the end of the regular season, the hiring, firing cycle, and the postseason all in the same basic 4-week stretch.
Yeah.
Let's just do it all at once. And so we've talked about moving signing day for high school. I would move it to like the middle of February, or at least take it back to that February date.
Yeah, where it was originally.
At least you're taking one thing off the plate. There's nothing you can do about the transfer portal because kids need to enroll in college.
Right.
For January. You also start your practices. That's the other thing. And your workouts. Like January, 4th, you get one of those, like, everyone's got to lift weights at 4:45 in the morning or something.
But, the trash cans for the kids to puke in.
We're really working this year. They're going to get finally get strong. But I don't know if you can just skip December anymore. It's why we saw 2 years ago, like, Brian Kelly just leaves a team that still had a chance.
Right.
In Notre Dame to make the playoff. Now, I think he's like, I'm going to make the playoff and lose. I just wanted out. He was just done with Notre Dame. But, and then Notre Dame, rather than wait for Luke Fickell to find out, because they're in the playoff, they just promote Marcus Freeman. So decisions are important on the transfer portal and that early signing window. So I don't know how, if A&M, not known for their patience, is willing to wait until everything plays out. So especially if Norvell makes the playoff. I say the same thing here with Kalen DeBoer. Mm-hmm. At Washington, I think timing would be a factor. But your thoughts on Kalen DeBoer in Washington? They're undefeated. They can make the playoff. But let's say they don't. You know, how would that work? Pat?
Yeah, that's the thing. And I mean, both Washington and Florida State could still miss the playoff, which could affect things significantly. But I would say Kalen DeBoer, 20%. He doesn't seem like an A&M kind of guy. Like, I mean, he's got a very good job at Washington. And, you know, I think he can wait and see whether it's this year or some other year, other things that may open up. I mean, I've heard his name is like an immediate wish list guy if Harbaugh leaves Michigan. Yep. You know, so don't take Texas A&M.
Sharon Moore may be clamping that job down.
Well, I mean, he might.
We'll see what happens. If Harbaugh is suspended for the rest of the season, if that's the case, and Sharon Moore wins the next two, if he beats Ohio State,
I was going to say there's one game out there that if he wins might really.
Yeah, that job is locked up. He's coach in waiting. He may be coach in waiting anyway. I don't know what their thing is, but they like Sharon Moore at Michigan. But yes, Michigan would be able to go and Kalen DeBoer. That's a different ball game than Texas A&M.
Kalen we talk a lot about fits and stuff. Like, that would not be a fit at all at A&M. So 5%, pretty low there. I would not expect that to happen. I think Washington he's a great fit there. And I think they're working on, probably a pretty significant contract enhancement for him. I would expect him to either stay there, or if he does leave it, I think it'd be for another spot. It just doesn't seem to me like he's a guy that would work at all in College Station.
All right, let me throw two SEC coaches in the mix. Lane Kiffin.
Now you're talking.
Spicy.
Now you're talking. That's I would say Kiffin, I would think, would want the job. He wanted Auburn last year. It didn't quite work out, and he backed out and said he would stay at Mississippi. But if you're Mississippi, you can't be kidding yourself into thinking you're going to keep Lane Kiffin for as long as you want Lane Kiffin. So I think he is interested. He would be attractive to a degree. He's a little bit of a wild hair. He's a little bit disorganized, kind of a little operates with chaos, which is kind of the way Jimbo operated. Would they like somebody with a little more structure to their program? That could be a factor, but nice, splashy offense. The other thing, too, if I'm A&M, I'm like, let's see, have you beaten Nick Saban? No, have you come close to beating Nick Saban? Not really. Now, Saban's not going to be there forever, but if you want to win now, I don't think Kiffin has a fully formed resume. But in terms of people you could get who win games and kind of galvanize a program, I think he's high on the list of gettable candidates.
Did you give
you want a percentage?
Yeah, come on.
51%. 51%.
Right. That's going to get aggregated.
I guess the percentage is if offered, would he take it? Because we can't do percentage overall. Because
I thought it was a percentage was, you know, what are the chances that he's going to be the coach, head coach?
Yeah. Well, Ross, that would be a good podcast host was running the show. Yeah. They would have set the parameters. But I made it up on the fly, and we have this completely ridiculous game.
If offered,
so you think it's a 51% chance Lane Kiffin's the head coach at A&M? Hey, you do you with your numbers. I don't care.
So the only thing here, and it's similar to Lanning too. Lanning has a $20 million buyout. Lane's buyout is pretty steep too. I think it's maybe as much as I know. What is money for a program who's just paid, who just committed $75 million and $20 million immediately to a coach, to buying out a coach? I know.
Okay, thank you.
But there's a little bit of that fact, maybe a little tiny bit of that factor in there, because I think Lane's buyout could be as much as $20 million as well. So I think this is probably going to be my highest percentage, kind of like Pat. I would probably say 40%.
All right. Okay. 40% chance he's the head coach.
Mm-hmm.
Not my scenario.
No, so not your weird weirdo.
I don't know what way. Okay, scrap that one. it's probably holding us back from being the number one sports pod, or the fact that we don't have two brothers, one who is in the Super Bowl and the other dating Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
That helps.
We need to work on our resumes. If only
we had a Taylor Swift boyfriend on the show, it'd really help our downloads. it does help. Or anyway. So I wonder with Lane, okay, he's got a nice team. They've won a ton of close games. They're doing a good job, right? They're winning one score games. They very well could end up 10-2. And they didn't stand a chance against Alabama and Georgia. And at what point do you sit there and go, man, that mountain's too far high to climb at Ole Miss? And there's a little James Franklin in him of we can get up there, but we can't beat these guys. I'd say Franklin's closer. I don't think Franklin would be a candidate here because he's had longer, and Penn State is a way more even ground with Michigan particularly, and perhaps pretty even ground with Ohio State than Ole Miss is with Alabama and Georgia. That said, nobody beats Alabama and Georgia. Right. Jimbo did.
Yeah.
And look what that got them.
Yeah.
One fun night. There's that one video of the guy, the kicker's girlfriend. That's about it. Celebrating with the family. All right.
What's your percentage, Dan?
Oh, yeah.
For Lane.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I do like 30%.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, I think if they offer it, he'd take it. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it'd be a very interesting. I think it's gettable, and it's and I wouldn't blame him for doing it. He's pretty happy at Ole Miss. He's got quarterbacks lined up, but he'll get that. I don't think there's any. This is nothing negative against Ole Miss. I think he's pretty happy there. They're treating him well, but that's the scenario. All right, another SEC coach though. This would be my wild card guy. I would look at Eli Drinkwitz.
Hmm. Hmm.
Okay. Because you're hiring outside the SEC. Can you win in the SEC? Well, he's winning. Played Georgia closer than Ole Miss did. Not as big of a name yet, but it's not easy at Missouri. What do you think of Eli Drinkwitz's chances?
If I were A&M, I would certainly be intrigued, but I would also look and say, okay, he had three very mediocre years before this year. Does that mean he's kind of caught lightning in a bottle, or does that mean it was just a hard job that you had to build to this point? I think I'd need an answer to that. And I think the answer might be the latter. I will tell you this. He is a great recruiter, excellent recruiter, and he's used the NIL advantages at Missouri extremely well. And so, you know, he's put together some really good talent, not like a ton of it, but, you know, it's not like he has 18 4 and 5 stars starting on offense and defense, but he's got some very good highly rated players in some key spots. And then you get a D2 transfer who puts up 330 yards of total offense. Truman State, baby. Yep. If I were A&M, I would probably have Kiffin higher on my list than I would have Drinkwitz. So I'm going to put Drink at 27.5%.
Ooh, okay. Still high.
That's at like 211%.
Right? Yeah, I'm probably, you know, like don't try to figure out whether my odds or percentages make sense.
Yeah, that this is an interesting one because he's having a hell of a year, but going into this year, people thought that he might be fired if they had a bad year, and lo and behold, he's probably going to win 10 games. And he has done, it seems like, He really does kind of more with less sort of thing. So imagine if he had more, he could do more with more at a place like A&M with the talent. I think I would put it low just because I'm not sure that, you know, A&M would probably have a few others just on their list, just guys who have won probably a little more than I think this is only Eli's maybe fourth year as a head coach, I believe.
It is.
Is that right?
Yeah. So, well, fifth, because he had the one at App State, right?
Yeah, App State. So I would 12%.
I put about 6. I don't think they'll offer him, but and I don't know that you should. Think about the 1 year is a year ago everyone was excited about Shane Beamer.
Mm. Yeah. Right.
Now maybe he gets it back going. It's hard to win consistently, but, you know, everyone, Shane Beamer's the hot SEC coach. We don't know.
A lot of these guys on our list, honestly, I mean, Lanning, like, year two, right?
Yeah.
So it just, right. They haven't had a whole lot of proven. I mean, Lane is probably the one that has had the most.
Deion Sanders.
6-game losing streak. Come on, Dan. Get out of here.
Texas legend.
Yeah.
Cowboys. I don't know. No, 0%.
Can recruit the state. Yeah, no, 0%.
If Shador could transfer again, I don't think he's
done that. 0%? I don't know. Shador, what do you think? Could grad transfer it.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. No, 0%.
0%.
I will put a 0 on that one.
Okay.
0.
All right. Let's get to the more gettable for sure. Mike Elko, Duke, having a good season, shown some stuff, was at Texas A&M.
Mm-hmm.
Pat?
Yeah, this is where rubber meets road, I think, similarly to Lane Kiffin, where, you know, he would certainly take a long look at the job. I think he likes Duke, and Duke certainly likes him. Duke has to really show, okay, do we want to go all in on football, like real football schools do or not. And I think the answer to that would dictate his level of interest. The question now, how much is A&M's interest in him? I mean, he did very good work there. If you're winning at Duke, you're pretty good. And he's kind of a, you know, salt of the earth, no nonsense sort of football guy that I think he would be fine at an A&M, you know. The question too now, what would his offense look like? His offense has been good enough at Duke, but it hasn't been like eye-opening. He also inherited a lot of players. Believe it or not, like David Cutcliffe left him good players, similar to what DeBoer got at Washington, where they had players that were better than their record. But he's done a good job with them. I think he and Kiffin are the two most likely. So percentage-wise, if Kiffin's 51, then Elko's 49 in my stratosphere, where I took my last math class as a junior in high school, and I got a C in it. So no, don't expect showing. My percentages to make sense.
Yeah, it's showing.
Well, if we're going by Dan's thing, weird if he would take the job, it's 100% that he would take the job if offered, I would imagine.
Well, you had but to do if offered, though, so it's like a double this weekend math.
It's too early, Dan. It's too early. But chances of him being the head coach on week one next year, I think, are probably somewhat similar to my percentages with Lane. I'll go 35%. I think that I think again the issue here is year two, but just not proven necessarily. But man, I mean, he's done an incredible job. Their defense is fun to watch, and he's got them playing really well. You wonder if they didn't have the injuries, especially at quarterback this year, if they would, you know, be not more like 8-2 instead of 6-4.
I would think he's, yeah, they definitely got a chance.
I would say this. I would see, like, if he has his choice of jobs, he's taking A&M over Michigan State, because Michigan State's been talking about him quite a bit.
Yeah, they have.
I would think Michigan State is a terrific spot for him to go, and terrific for Michigan State. All right, yep. One of these three, Lance Leopold, Chris Klieman, and Jeff Traylor. Obviously, Leopold's at Kansas. Klieman is at Kansas State. Traylor is at UT San Antonio. Any thoughts on that? We don't need to have full breakdowns of these guys.
Yeah, I mean, Traylor's done good work, and he knows Texas. You know, it's a heck of a jump from UTSA to Texas A&M and the SEC. But, I mean, if you look, like, they lost a couple of games early this year. Frank Harris, their seventh-year quarterback, was injured and didn't play in two of those. So you take those out, and they've got one loss this year, and it's to Houston by three. You know, Traylor, I think, is good, and I think he could be a live candidate there. I think Leipold is certainly willing to look around. I would love to have Lance Leipold coach my team, whatever my team is. I just think he's fantastic. He's a winner. I just don't know whether A&M's the spot for him. I think he's more upper Midwest sort of guy. And Klieman, I would probably say the same thing. But a winner, doing a great job, but I just don't know whether A&M's the spot.
Yeah, Klieman, he seems pretty content at Kansas State. Lance, I would say, is more movable, and certainly Jeff Traylor, you know, at UTSA. I mean, that would be a big jump, you know. But I think there are a few people at A&M, I think, that are kind of like in his corner that want that to happen. And I think Lance might get a little peek at that job too, if I had to guess. I would put Lance and Traylor's candidacy about the same, you know, 10 to 15%.
All right, let's move on to the other big coaching. No offense, San Diego State. We'll get to you at some point, maybe. And Michigan State is still open, but that thing's just a slow.
That's what
code.
The Pac-12 said to San Diego State. We'll get to you at some point, maybe.
Maybe not. They were so close. Of course, it would have been worse to like get in and then have the whole league.
Yeah.
Like,
well, right. Yeah. Welcome to the league. It's like
you show up at the party and the music skids to a stop and you're like, what did I do, man? I just got here.
Yeah. Somebody pulled the fire alarm in the building. Everybody out.
The cops break up the party.
Will we ever see another game where one team wins 51-10 as Texas A&M did over Mississippi State on Saturday night, and by Monday morning, both coaches are fired?
So, you know what? Look, the SEC, they knew how far behind the Big Ten they are in sort of like lunacy this year. And so they hit the hurry-up offense and started getting some things going. Yeah, we're going to fire a guy after he wins by 41 points with his third-string quarterback, and then we're going to fire the guy he beat, too. So that's the SEC showing they still got some moves.
It would have been embarrassing to keep the coach that lost by 41 to the fired coach.
Yeah.
I think Mississippi State was kind of bullied into this. Ross, what is happening at your alma mater?
Yeah, not good things. You know, Zach Arnett, he was 36 when he got the job, I believe, youngest coach in the SEC, youngest in like 40 years, second youngest ever, I think. So not the greatest time to have your first head coaching job at the arguably the second toughest job in the SEC. Days after the sudden passing of your head coach, it was a lot. I understand that a lot of people might say that he was put in a very kind of unfair position, but you know, don't be too sympathetic for a man who got paid $3 million a year and will get a check of around $4 to $4.5 million in buyout that is mitigated. So at the end, Mississippi State might actually not pay much at all if he gets another job because he's a pretty high level defensive coordinator. So, you know, I think that it was funny. I was making calls in July and August just around the industry about, hey, what jobs could open? And man, Mississippi State job kept coming up. And I was like, man, this is year one. But they set the contract up, as I just mentioned, you know, to be able to have the opportunity to potentially do this if it got real bad. And it's pretty bad, right? They're as uncompetitive of a Mississippi State team since I was in school, when Sylvester Croom was a coach. I haven't seen the team look this bad, especially offensively, since in 20 years. So it got to the point where I think they thought, you know, got to make a move. The problem now is finding somebody to take a job that is very, very difficult. And, you know, State not only has issues with, you know, they're surrounded by they have great players in the state per capita. It's like top three in the country of producing college football players, major college football players. But they're surrounded by the Alabamas and the Auburns and the LSUs and the Tennessees coming in and getting their players. But also in the age of NIL, it's certainly different there. I think they have been passed up by a few league members when it comes to their NIL structure and in situation. And you guys remember, I think we talked about it last year when John Cohen, the AD, left Mississippi State. Think about this. John Cohen's a Mississippi State grad, left State. Scott Strickland's a Mississippi State grad, left State. Why? Right? Like there are struggles there.
Right.
There are struggles there in resources. And in the NIL era, it's a real struggle. And so before even you think about like a coach, they got to get the resource situation with NIL straight there.
Yeah, it's always been a tough job. And I've always, you know, been impressed by the people who could win there, like Dan Mullen and a few others over the years. But it's difficult. But, you know, the situation with Arnett, I don't blame Arnett. I mean, he was thrust into that situation. I'm not sure what, you know, Mississippi State hired him because they were in a tough spot and on a rebound, and they at least were smart with the contract. Zach Selman comes in as AD and is like, this ain't working. He ain't my guy. Pull the trigger. So we'll see where they go with it. You know, I heard like Tom Herman's name bounced around from Florida Atlantic. That would be somewhat intriguing, I think. You know, I don't know whether you could get a Willie Fritz. That would be fantastic if you could, I think. But I don't know. You know, Willie's at the top of a pretty good league going to a 12-team playoff where you're going to have a playoff chance if you're the AAC champion most years. Do you want to go to Mississippi State and get your teeth kicked in by everybody else? I don't know. So it is not an easy job to fill, and I don't know what's the best direction to go with it.
So I'll say this. When you talk to Mississippi State, some segment of Mississippi State fans, or you write about Mississippi State, and you say, and look, Ross went there. He's from Mississippi, went there. It's pretty obvious to me that you're not as resourced, that it's a tough job. They will scream back at you and say it isn't. Look at our success. Mm-hmm. We've been better than most of these schools for a long time. It's my opinion is it's still that shows how overachieving you are. But I kind of respect that Mississippi State, I don't know if Zach Arnett got a fair chance or not. It's just a horrible situation. Mike Leach dies. They promote within. Like, it's just the whole thing was just nothing good happened in the last 12 months with Mississippi State. I don't know whether Zach Arnett deserved another year or not, but I will give Mississippi State credit for this. They are acting like they should be good. That actually gives me some, I kind of like that. If I was my team, not, well, where does Mississippi State? We got to give guys, you know, a couple years. Here's what they should have done a year ago. I don't know if they can do it now. I don't know if they want to do it now. I don't know if they ever want to do it, but the guy from Mississippi State was Deion Sanders. He was at Jackson State.
Yep.
He's in the state.
Yep.
Everyone's waiting for him to get to the South and be surrounded by all these players. And okay, we don't have NIL money. Neither did Colorado. They got it. We don't have boosters given enough. Actually, they way more. Like, well, he gets that stuff done. I know they have lost a bunch of games, and he may not be your perfect coach, but Deion Sanders, it's year one at Colorado. He took a much worse situation than Mississippi State had. Colorado hasn't been good in decades. Deion Sanders is the guy. He's the lottery ticket. Your chance of getting huge is greater with Deion Sanders than it is with, no offense to Tom Herman or something like that, where you're trying to be like, hey, man, can we get back? Like, you go 9-3 there. You're doing great. Deion Sanders was the guy to hire last year. I understand the circumstances of why that didn't happen or played a factor. But if you could get him to a place like Mississippi State, pretty interesting. I mean, the guy was, he was in your state. He was right there. But I don't know. I don't see how that happens. I can't imagine him leaving Travis Hunter behind. I just can't imagine it happening. A million reasons it's not going to happen. I'd give that a 0.1%.
A million reasons now. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
But then.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was the move.
No. Right.
He was there.
I mean, I know that. I know that. I don't know as much that Mississippi State kicked any tires. I think it was too late, right? Like, I want to say Leach's passing was
might not have been.
But I know Ole Miss kicked the tires a little bit when they thought Kiffin was maybe going to leave for Auburn, and I know that was something that was discussed up there. The one thing about winning at Mississippi State, you know, for so long, State was what, average 3 to 5 wins a year, and then Jackie Sherrill came along, right, and raised expectations. And the way, you know, Jackie did some things in Starkville.
Recastrated the bowl.
Well, he castrated the bowl. There were plenty of other things he did. Let's just say the NCAA had opened a bureau in Starkville, quite literally, I think, had a long-term condo that the investigator stayed in.
Only Alabama's allowed to cheat? What the heck? Come on now.
So my point is, and then Dan came along. And even further those expectations, if Jackie averaged, you know, if Mississippi State went from a 4-win historical team to a 6-win under Jackie, and then they went to like a 7-8 win under Dan. But even Dan, right, the probably the greatest coach in Mississippi State football history, I think his record against the top of the league was awful. Like, right, LSU, the Alabamas, even Auburn. I don't remember what it was, but it was really bad. And it's historically going to be like that. But the point I'm trying to make is be different, right? You got to be kind of different to win at Mississippi State. I think Dan was different in a lot of ways, especially offensively. Jackie was different in his way off the field. And, you know, you got to be different. So who can they hire?
Leach was wildly different.
Yeah, well, Leach, yeah, and Leach averaged, I don't know, in the end, probably what, 7 wins a year or something like that, 6.5, 7 wins a year. Like, you have to be different. Who out there is different? You know, I think that's probably why you heard a name like Tom Herman. Tom is a little different, right? The way he maybe even acts off the field and offensively, you know, the urban guy, kind of like Dan. So I think that's probably why you heard his name a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Pretty interesting. All right. This story from Tuesday morning, Bobby Burton of Inside Texas knows his stuff with the Longhorns. Says Quinn Ewers is expected to return to Texas next season. Mm. A source to Bobby Burton, who I trust as a good reporter down there. The decision may have already been made, but it's at least 90% right now. See, we're playing the numbers games like I do.
He reported 90%?
It's 100%. It's 90%. 100% of the time, he's 90% right. I don't know.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
I don't know. Quinn Ewers back. I mean, it's not like Quinn Ewers is staring at being the number 3 pick in the draft or something. Mm-mm. Mm-mm. So, Quinn Ewers coming back. What would that mean to the Horns this year, next year?
What would it mean to Arch Manning? What's going on?
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
What's happening, Pat?
That's an interesting one. I watch Quinn Ewers play, and he's a good quarterback. I don't like arm and delivery. I don't necessarily see a guy that the NFL is going to be like, oh yeah, we need that guy. So it makes some sense to me. But then the big question, yeah, what does that mean for Arch? You know, I think Arch and his family were happy to have him redshirt this year and sit and grow and mature and learn and all those things. But I'm not sure that, you know, the plan is for the number one quarterback in the country to sit a second year. And so then you start looking around the SEC and seeing who needs a quarterback, and it becomes a little more interesting there. But that's a very, you know, that these are the problems that coaches love to have. It's like, oh, we have too many quarterbacks. Oh, good.
Too many number one recruits.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's like I was blown away watching Mississippi after Georgia knocked out Jackson Dart. It's like, oh, yeah, Spencer Sanders, like 3-year starter at Oklahoma State is the backup. And that's a luxury not many people have. So we'll see how that susses itself out at Texas.
This is like the most risky thing in the world to report, I feel like, right? you're reporting on a 20-year-old's future decision that he may even himself think is made, and then everything changes. I mean, these things change all the time. Gosh, I remember being the beat reporter at LSU for a stretch of years where they produced, basically, they led the country, even over Alabama, in underclassmen leaving, like average 8 a year. And I remember juggling that news every year, trying to figure out who was leaving and who was staying. And it was just impossible. I no matter who reported it, if our boy Pete reported it, if Bruce reported it, I wouldn't believe any of the reports on this guy is staying or going right now in mid-November. I just wouldn't. So that I just want to put that out there. But if he does stay, number one, it would be monumental for Texas. But number two, what does Arch Manning do?
Yeah. Mm. Well, huge for Texas if they could go into the SEC with Quinn Ewers. No question. I am with you. Bobby Burton, no shade on Bobby Burton. Excellent connected reporter at Texas. That said, if Quinn Ewers said he was returning, I'd still put it at 90%.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
First off,
if he said it publicly,
they make the playoff.
I mean, that's happened before.
Yeah, they make the playoff, and he tears it up the next 3-4 games.
Yeah.
And rises into the top 10 of the draft, you're gone.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's a little early. But, you know, look, we love reckless coverage of stuff.
Yes.
It wasn't my report. I love someone else out on that limb. Yeah. Not me out on that limb on this one. I didn't report it. For what it's worth, I don't know. Eli Manning redshirted his entire first year at Ole Miss, the 99 season, did not see the field. And then was a backup who got in 6 games, only threw 53 passes, 3 touchdowns, his redshirt freshman year. So there was a lot of patience with Eli. Could there be a lot of patience with Arch? Now, it is a different era. Now, guys, will they're transferring if they sit for two games. We just had that NC State guy. He's the starter. MJ Morris is potentially he's redshirting as the starter. So it's a whole different, that is ancient times. But the Mannings are old school, long time, long view people. So I don't know. I mean, we already got Arch in the portal. We got a 90% report here. Mayhem at the deal. Ross, you have a update on Oregon State, Washington State, the Pac-2, the two-pack, the court pack. Battle. What do we got? Who's getting the money?
This case is just fascinating to me. I know most people probably think it's boring, but I don't think they will think that it's boring once they know if a decision goes in one way, what this could set off. So I'll set the scene today. At 5 p.m. Eastern, there'll be a hearing in Washington County Court in front of a judge in the case, Oregon State in Washington State versus all the other Pac-12 exiting members. And basically, Oregon State and Washington State want full control. And it was first thought, at least by me and I think plenty of others, that the full control part was over the assets, the money, the control of the money coming to the Pac-12 in the future after all the exiting teams leave. No. A court filing last week clarified some of that. The fight is over this academic year's distribution, which is $400 million. So Oregon State and Washington State are wanting control of the assets for this year. Now, what they will do with those assets, I don't know, but certainly the other 10 believe that Oregon State and Washington State will keep their TV distribution money and their money from the CFP and their money from the NCAA tournament and their money from the Rose Bowl, which, again, about $400 million. And they'll keep it for themselves to rebuild the league later. Maybe not all of it, but they'll keep a lot of it. They have control over it if the judge rules that way. So the judge can rule, you know, either Oregon State, and there's basically three options the judge can rule. Number one is a big win for Oregon State and Washington State. You get control of all this money, $400 million this year and probably as much as $150, $200 million in future years coming to the Pac-12, over $500 million. So that's option one. Option two is they lose, the Oregon State and Washington State lose, and all the 12 members get a seat back on the board with voting rights and control all this money. And then everything kind of goes how you might think, right? They distribute the money evenly and it's normal. There's a third option for the judge to continue the current order that he made in September, which is preventing the board from meeting at all, and only decisions can be made in unanimity. So those are the three kind of options here. But if the judge rules Oregon State and Washington State gets full control, look out, right? They have all this money. It could set off another round of realignment because they'll have all this money to potentially rebuild the league by paying exit fees for potentially expansion targets and restructuring the conference. So it's pretty fascinating. And also, they're in the middle of trying to schedule games, Oregon State and Washington State. And again, they don't have enough money. There's no financial incentive that they are offering to teams to cancel games and schedule, you know, put together these schedules over the next year or two as they look to be a two-team conference. But with all this money, they'll be able to do that. So it makes it easier for them to put together some schedules because they can just throw millions at other programs. So it's all fascinating. I don't know what's gonna happen. I thought a lot of this was a fight over future money, but now it's turned to more current dollars, in significant current dollars. So could you imagine Oregon State and Washington State getting all the TV distribution that all these other schools were counting on to have this year in their budget? That could happen.
That is big.
It is big. And I mean, it's like life-changing money for those two schools. I remain Team Beavers, Team Cougars in this. I want them to get all the money. I want everybody who left them to die to get none of it. I don't care. You know, I don't know what the legalese of it is in terms of cosmic fairness. That's what I want.
You leave. It's theirs. I'm with you guys on that one. I mean, tough break. You're going for money. Well,
yeah,
might cost you a little bit behind. All right, Jim Harbaugh still expected to be suspended. Maryland game, Ohio State game. He held a whopper of a press conference on Monday.
The quotes were incredible.
Incredible quotes. He's allowed to coach the team. I talked about this on the emergency pod. If you're interested in a longer Pat and I went for like 50 minutes. This is why I thought the penalty was kind of stupid. I don't know where the penalty is. If you're gonna do this, do it. Just having Jim hanging around the office all week, coaching, strategizing, not being there on the game. I don't know what that really did for anyone, but this is part of the why. But I'm glad they did, because we get Jim Harbaugh unfiltered, and he's playing it up, right? First off, we'll just get this out of the way. He declares Michigan should be America's team because of the adversity they are going through. Okay, enough. Connor Stallions was breaking the rules, man. You were breaking the rules. And ergo, Michigan was breaking the rules. This is not a victim.
No. Mm-mm.
I think Tony Petitti overstepped due process and shouldn't have waded in, and he's got all sorts of problems going forward, including declaring that somebody knowing signs puts players – health at risk, which an attorney who loves suing the NCAA told me this week was like, I couldn't have written that better. Thank you, Tony Petitti. You just said if we know signs, it increases the likelihood of injury for players. Oh, my God, it's a gold mine. Because they all know the signs. But other than all those things, they're not a victim. Like in there, I get it in the team I get. Yes. If you're a player on the team, you're a coach, you're just like, we're getting battering rammed here. But that's all right. I'm not even dignifying the America's team. Unless, Pat, you have a rant to go on.
America's
on
team.
America's team is under indictment.
The poor Michigan Wolverines. Poor Michigan heroes.
My rant is similar to the rants that I've had on this.
I think unbelievably
melodramatic divas, get over yourself.
Enough.
Yeah.
Like I get your points, but no. Anyway, Harbaugh. Who cares? This is way better. A, he says, oh, we're getting to the chickens. He says he wants to speak at Friday's hearing in Washtenaw County, where they're going to do this temporary restraining order. I have a feeling he will not be permitted, but we'll see. Hope so. He said, discussing his legal woes. I'm not an attorney. I always wanted to be. I've watched a lot of shows, watched Judge Judy a lot. Him and his dad went to a Judge Judy.
Yeah.
I always kind of felt like it'd be cool to get up there and thunder away at a jury like Tom Cruise and A Few Good Men or be a judge, Judge Judy. But alas, I did not go to law school.
Alas.
Playing the NFL. Okay. Judge. He's channeling his Judge Judy. He had a raspy voice. Someone asked if he's sick. Yeah, I don't know what I have. Some kind of virus or something, the trainer told me, but I'm not sick. I feel great. Got a tremendous workout in today. I'm the iron wall that viruses bash against and shatter.
Really feeling himself yesterday, wasn't he?
That's his best line since I'm attacking the day with enthusiasm unmatched in the history of mankind. I'm the iron wall that viruses bash against and shatter. He says he can't get sick. But just in case, he's going to do some more push-ups, eat an apple.
That's so great. I'm jealous of that line, because this sounds like, I don't know, like family trash talk to me. Like in our family, myself and Clayton, my middle child, never get sick, and we mock the rest of the family for getting sick. And so this, like, I wish I would have thought of that line to use. The viruses bash against me and shatter like an iron wall. That is the most fantastic line from a guy who's had a lot of lines. That's incredible.
It's not well. He's not well.
Maybe he's really well.
Or he's very well. I don't know.
Yeah.
One of the two.
So this was one of the, they're like, you don't seem all this. I mean, a little bit of controversy circling. Yeah. Jim, how you feeling about all this?
Yeah.
Okay. And the reporters are kind of concerned with his mental health, which is mental health awareness is a big thing now.
It is.
You would think this would be stressful. Apparently not. He says, you don't understand. I just go to work when things happen in my life. He just works. He goes on with it. He brings up some marital advice. His wife, Sarah. And he says, Sarah doesn't like when I talk about her. She does not like it. I apologize to Sarah before I say this. So, first off, that he just violated the marriage. When your wife says don't do something and then you do it anyway and apologize, don't do that. Sometimes Sarah Harbaugh gets mad at Jim Harbaugh. You know, they've been married a long time.
Dan, I have a breaking news alert. So we just talked about the Quinn Ewers thing. And here is Pete Thamel, our boy Pete. Texas quarterback Quinn Ewers has yet to decide on whether to declare for the NFL draft. There's been early conversations, but there's a long way to go in those conversations, just like I was talking about, right? But it's a fun fodder. It's fun to talk about. It is.
Fun
but
fodder.
We should all keep a good open mind to that that news from On Three.
I would put it at, it probably should have been framed as it's not determined he's going pro like everyone else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%,
like, considering 90%. Conversations, like, there's other ways to report that story.
We'll see. Yeah. I hope he's back.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway,
for Sarah Harbaugh. Sarah Harbaugh. This is Jim. She'd get mad at me and get after me. So Jim's getting the business back home. Sometimes I get angry. I got two options. I can come back and fire back, and I'll show her who's boss. Or I can turn right around, go out, feed the chickens, clean out the coop, cut the lawn, edge it, work for hours. It always is the better resolution. Jim Harbaugh, marital advice. I can't deny that is, I agree. Pat, Rod, and we're all married.
I mean,
sometimes you just got to go cut the lawn or I don't have a chicken.
No, that is actually bulletproof advice. Go feed the chickens, clean out the coop, everyone. Everyone, just, go get your chickens. Go buy some chickens. Set up a coop, and when things get rocky, you go tend to the chickens.
No one will bother you if you're cleaning out a chicken.
Remember the nervous bird comment? He backed away from that, huh?
Yeah. We're gonna get.
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to spoil it.
Oh yeah, no, but okay. So that's Coach Harbaugh's. I mean, this is all in one press conference while he's literally the most heat lamped guy in the entire. He's suspended like. Unbelievable.
Controversy raging around his program.
He's giving marital advice, and you're like, yeah, not too bad. That's actually fairly sound. Okay. Someone asked, you have chickens? Like, I love that.
Great follow-up.
The Michigan press conference is like, perfect. Everyone comes with their prepared questions, and then it's just off the rails.
Yeah.
Did you just say you have a chicken coop? I have chickens. During COVID, I went to the Tractor Supply. And before they shut down, went to Tractor Supply, got the chickens, bought them home for Easter. They're just little chicks. So he has the chickens, they go. So if you remember years ago, he told one of his quarterbacks he didn't like him eating chicken because he deemed the chicken a nervous bird. And he didn't think quarterbacks who need to be steady under fire should eat chicken. Because the nerves somehow would get into their body. And so he prefers beef because the cow just stands there.
Never nervous. Reasonable explanation.
Hard to make a cow nervous. I will give it that. You can look, right? One of the more bizarre ideas anyone's ever heard. But again, this is who we're dealing with. The respect I have for chickens, he said. I know. This guy. I can show like him
that,
and Connor.
It's like that.
He saw
meme
Connor Salience in himself. He saw him, a young Jim Harbaugh.
Jim is like, it's like that meme of where the house is burning and the dog is sitting there. It's like, this is fine. Like, that's Harbaugh at the presser. Everything is collapsing and burning around him. Like, all this shit is going on. And he's just like, yeah, I'm cool. I'm talking about chickens.
Yeah, my chickens. The respect that I have for chickens. I know there was a time when I said a chicken is a nervous bird. I don't eat chicken. I only eat meat. But I was dead wrong. I stand corrected. These chickens are low maintenance and high production. It's like Blake Corum. The Blake Corum of Inside the Five. Red Zone Blake. They lay an egg every 26 to 27 hours. And they need water. And they need food. And I play with them, too. I let them out in the yard. We run around, and they're happy to see me. They're happy to see me. There's times that I do a good thing for other people, and they're not as happy to see me as my chickens are. So it's good. It's good for my mental health as well. And get fresh eggs every day. Highly productive. Highly productive. So you know, the mystery of the nervous bird is over. He has recanted his position.
How about that? He's made peace with the chicken world. That's big. And like coaches, what do you usually get when they talk about respect and presence? We have great respect for Maryland. We have great respect for whoever your next opponent is. He has great respect for chickens. That's where we are with Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah. So that is it. All right. We have an update on the ongoing saga of appropriate holiday movies to show while getting your ass kicked at halftime by Auburn. We appreciate the Arkansas Razorbacks for bringing this to attention. If you watched, if you listened Sunday, Sunday show, we discussed that the Polar Express, Tom Hanks animated holiday classic, Christmas classic, was on a TV in the Arkansas locker room. It was a big mystery. Mystery solved. Sam Pittman has come clean. Coach Sam, good job. He said the guy came to him, unnamed player. We do not know I don't know that we need this guy outed, do we?
No, we don't. No.
It's even, you're generally not going to send a Freedom of Information Act on that one. The young man made a mistake, Pittman said. He sent a video to a friend. The friend sent it to his brother to put it out, what have you. I've already addressed it. I think we're fine here. It was a mistake, so I wish he wouldn't have, but he came and he was sorry. He also said he didn't even know there were TVs were on. Coach Pittman was focused. So, indeed, Arkansas has admitted Polar Express was on at half for the players, and that's the end of that saga, I guess. I see no need for further.
Well, there's a couple of thoughts here. One.
Integrity.
Yeah, guardrails. If you're Sam Pittman, you waited decades to get a head coaching job. You might think, golly, those days when I was an offensive line coach and I didn't have to answer half-assed questions about people watching Polar Express at halftime of a game, those seem pretty good right now. Go back to being the offensive line coach that doesn't have to deal with that. But the other, like some people, I don't know about you guys, like when they get to a hotel room or they get home, they have to turn on the TV and they've got to have a TV on all the time. Some people even sleep with the TV on. Maybe that's what the situation here. I personally, I do not need a TV on in my life. I certainly wouldn't at halftime of a football game.
I hope we get more teams watching holiday movies at halftime of games over the next couple weeks, just like randomly in the background. Christmas Vacation, Elf. Let's do it. Let's get it started.
Yeah, maybe it's the new tradition. I can imagine Saban losing his marbles on this.
That's it. If you're down three or more touchdowns, you're allowed to turn on a holiday movie.
Watch a movie. It could calm nerves, like we said. Elf. I mean, who's not in a better mood after Elf?
Exactly.
All right. Final story we're going to get to before we lose this one. Colorado played at UCLA at the Rose Bowl on October 28th. After the game, it was discovered that someone had broken into the Colorado locker room and stolen jewelry from the players, from the Colorado players. Deion Sanders was aghast. Who gets robbed at the Rose Bowl? Fair question.
It is.
Fair question. He suggested that the NCAA should pay the Colorado players back. I don't think that was going to work.
The NCAA is like, wait a minute. We've been boxed out of college football for a long time.
Yeah, we're another. The granddaddy of them all, he was calling it. It was pretty entertaining. He wanted his stuff back in a real indignity. Not only did UCLA win the game, but Pasadena police have confirmed this story was initially broken by the Coach JB show. who's the coach at who's the coach at Last Chance U was in Kansas. My man, JB, he's very funny. Pasadena police confirmed that the suspects tied to the theft were high school recruits on an official visit to UCLA. UCLA's recruits, UCLA's team beat Colorado. Their recruits ran a heist. Thousands of dollars, including jewelry, headphones, and cash. Cash? College kids don't carry cash.
They don't. That's a surprising item there.
Maybe Colorado players do. Cash. So UCLA's recruits. Thoughts on Colorado? Chip Kelly's in trouble too, by the way.
Yes, he is.
I don't know.
Probably doesn't help. Who are you recruiting, Chip? The decide.
Who's keeping an eye on the recruits?
Yeah,
aren't you like
right? Yeah, yeah. Somebody, yeah, where's your upperclassmen who are supposed to be shepherding them around at these sort of
or
things?
Like recruiting guide or analyst or somebody, right?
Yeah.
He's probably
yeah,
filming
right.
The sidelines instead of watching the recruits.
Yeah, that's if I'm the AD and the chancellor at UCLA, it's like, okay, I don't think we're recruiting those guys anymore, Chip. Cross them off your list.
Well, yeah, there's also the part they probably are going to be detained.
Yeah.
It's grand theft. Home visit at the Pasadena jail. Talk through the little, talk through the glass. Like, coach, can I get an NIL deal? I need bail. Like, shoot those bail bonds.
Son, we can get you out. But
Pasadena bail bonds gives them an NIL deal if you can sign with the Bruins.
We're trying to spring you in time for spring practice. Let's go.
Today's show included, this is the thing about college football. We had stories here today about a castrated bull at Mississippi State. A prominent coach declaring you shouldn't eat chicken because it might make you nervous. And yet there was still a story I'd never heard of. I've never heard of recruits stealing, breaking into the opposing team's locker room and robbing them. Guardrails. All right, we're going to talk the upcoming games, playoff ranks, about the playoff, a lot of playoff scenarios. There's still a chance the Big 12 could end in an 8-way tie. Who's not in favor of that? Talk about the math. We can't even figure out who's going where or that. More people are going to get fired. All sorts of stuff's going to happen. We can't wait. We'll be back on Thursday with our next show. Talk to you later.